So today the Parikram finally caught up with me, but I have to go on Parikram in about 15 minutes. If Baladev or Satsri Das Goswami is listening, Shastra gives his greetings from Vrindavan. I'm taking him on Parikram today, along with Mahari from Houston, and Gunagrai Maharaj, and Rasa Gya from Austin, Mother Kalini from Gitanagari, and many other devotees. We're going again back to our favorite place, which is Ter Kadamba, and we'll also go to Vrindakund, which is having its annual, celebration of the installation of the deities. And hopefully you'll get the fortune of meeting Dina Bandhu, Mother Devi Shakti, and other devotees that are there. So I won't be able to speak more than 10 or 15 minutes, but if I feel inspired, I'll just keep the cell phone in my pocket. I have an earphone, and hopefully I can still continue talking as we're getting into the cars. But if not, we'll end early. I should say one thing. Both the stories of the wives of the Brahmins blessed and Dana Kasara, I can finish in one more class. So this Sunday, I will finish the Dana Kasara. Next Wednesday, I will finish Wives of the Brahmins Blessed. And then I may take a one-week break because to figure out where we'll go next. I am getting suggestions from devotees. Several devotees suggested that they do like the idea of doing Brihad Bhagavatamrita or some Gaur Leela. But I'm still thinking and open up the suggestions. And the other thing also is I can see the nature of these classes is and the nature of Krishna consciousness. You can only give out what you put in. So this has been a putting out period of about 2-3 weeks on Parikram and not so much a putting in period, although there are wonderful realizations that do come from visiting all these places with the devotees. But especially I need to catch up a little bit. I'm not able to prepare the classes like I do, and I really feel that's essential. And also a certain level of morning sadhana that's a little bit better than I have now when I'm preaching. And I think that's essential, and I'm attached that the classes have a certain standard. But I will say something today, because this is generally when I speak of the wives of the Brahmins bless. And we'll discuss this next Wednesday in detail. But we're up to the part where the wives of the Brahmins, they go back, and the husbands see their level of Krishna consciousness. They come back from seeing Krishna, and the husbands see that their hairs are standing on end, and their body is shivering, and tears are coming from their eyes, and they're just Krishna, Krishna. They're still doing their duties also. They're back in the household, they're helping with the sacrifice, and this creates just such the wives of the husbands have such a shattering realization that their wives were not clean. Again, women with children cannot be clean, so clean, as a Brahmin. They haven't studied, they haven't done all these rituals, but they see that they achieved what the Brahmins were attempting to achieve. And they become extremely shocked, and it opens up, it's just a shift in their consciousness. It breaks them out of their ritualistic stupor. And they begin to condemn the religious activities they had with the consciousness of being mukha or being external to Krishna. And as they're turned away from Krishna, when you're turned towards Krishna, then all the rituals and cleanliness and sacrifices and austerities and charity you do, they help move you towards Krishna. But if you turn your consciousness away from Krishna, they only increase your ego. So they would think that they took shelter of simply the form of spirituality without the essence, because they didn't do it in knowledge with the proper essence, and it actually just increased their ego that I am Brahman. I am Brahman. And they realized it. And then what we're going to see towards the end of the chapter, we saw the wives of the Brahmins who were so spiritually advanced by extensively hearing about Krishna. We saw that. They were so advanced by extensively hearing about Krishna, which is the essence of spiritual life, bhakti sanjayate bhakti. Now we're going to see the wives of the Brahmins. Now we're going to see the wives of the Brahmins, and we're going to see how the Brahmins attain spirituality by the deep regret for their material consciousness based on the false ego. So again, I'm explaining that all these stories are leading to the Rasa Lila. You know, perfect, complete absorption. Gopi Bhav. Even I explained that the sannyas mantra, sannyas means complete renunciation. The gopis are the exemplars. They gave up everything for Krishna and completely absorbed in Krishna. So that's the goal. And Garuda Prabhu, in his book about the Rasa Dance, explained how the Rasa Dance exemplifies the form of the Rasa Dance, the consciousness of complete absorption in Krishna, prema bhakti. And what is prema bhakti? Bhishma Dev is given as the example that there's complete absorption in Krishna with nothing else in the consciousness. And actually, if there's anything else in the consciousness than Krishna, you don't have full enlightenment, because actually reality means that there is nothing else but Krishna. And Bhishma Dev is the example, and it's one of my favorite verses in the Bhagavatam. That person who fought in so many battles, that person who spoke on so many subjects, then he has focused his mind on Krishna. So along the way, there are, until we get to that point, there's anartha. And actually, even at the stage of bhava, there's traces of the anartha, literally meaning the unwanted things of reactions to Vaishnava aparad. And the only difference between bhava and prema is that subtlety. So the Bhagavatam is bringing us to that point. We're explaining in the story of Dainakasura how all the demons represent the different anarthas that one has to overcome to actually achieve prema. We're seeing in the Brahmins, and I'm going to discuss that extensively next Wednesday, we see in the Brahmins how necessary it is to regret the past life based on false ego. And then it's interesting that the word for remorse that used in the verse, they explained this, and the word for austerities, it's tapa. The word was tapa. Tapa means austerity, but remorse, because generally what austerities are, it's atonement for sinful activities to impress in your consciousness that one must get to distance himself from his activities. But what is the remorse of a Vaishnava? The remorse of a Vaishnava is not performing any austerities, etc. And it's essential to burn out. Tapa also, it's interesting, it also means fire. So it's actually austerities are meant to burn material desires and material consciousness. So what is the austerity of the Vaishnava? He looks back to his life based on false ego, and he regrets it, and he lets the pain and the embarrassment of his life of material consciousness, he feels that pain of his previous activities and the pretension of those activities, the result of those activities, how those activities affected others. And he lets it stay in his consciousness without being removed by rationalization. Because the process of rationalization is the intelligence serving the false ego. And the intelligence serving the false ego is to tell us that we're perfect. And no matter what we do, it will come in and remove any regret or remorse. It wasn't actually my fault. I didn't actually do anything. It was all circumstantial. Because you don't want the fire of the false ego burning. But the Vaishnava, and we're going to see this by the they accept their lot, and therefore and their consciousness is one we should take. They go dig. It says, I condemn my birth, I condemn this, I condemn this. I condemn anything that's connected with me that's a result of turning away from Krishna. And we're actually going to see that in there. And it's very nice. Then when that regret comes in and one can actually accept that I'm not the enjoyer and controller, that I'm not perfect, that actually I'm a soul under the modes of material nature, and that I need to take shelter of Krishna. And with that humility, one begins to feel mercy and love. And we see that in the example of the Brahmins also, because they're thinking now, then what is their thought? Then they can appreciate Krishna's mercy. What was Krishna's mercy? He sent the cowherd boys to beg food for them. He actually came, Krishna was coming forward towards him, towards the Brahmins to deliver them. And they didn't even appreciate that. But then the rationalization came in their mind. And what did the rationalization say? Well, no, they didn't come for me. Krishna was just hungry and needed food. But then immediately, because they have that fire of regret in their consciousness, then immediately comes the real feeling. No, Krishna is worshipped by the goddess of fortune. He doesn't need our food. He doesn't need anything from us. He's just coming towards us to deliver us. And then they begin to offer prayers. So I'm going to go over that in detail. And I'll just say one more thing. It's probably a codicil there. Our codicil was yesterday. This is the morning. I read something by Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati yesterday on a codicil that I wanted to share with you. Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur gave the scientific analysis of a codicil, and I never heard it before. And Bhurijan Prabhu always would tell me that a good class is when you hear something new. It's so exciting. And we were discussing this last night, and you missed it. But he described that either the new moon and the full moon, he said some kind of heat increases and increases the, like the moon with the tides, it increases the water in the body. And when the water in the body increases subtly, the rasa in the body, it increases the desire for material enjoyment. So the reason why they fast on Ekadasi is to dry up the body for a serious spiritual sadhaka, because it's going to increase his desire for enjoyment. Therefore, one fasts. If he doesn't fast, he takes less food, etc. He explained this scientifically. It is amazing, isn't it? But then he explains something interesting. It also affects Krishna, because Krishna is in Naralila. So Krishna is in a human mood. And that's why I explained in Bhakti Sandarbha, it says that a Vaishnava, even though one place that God appears is in the fire, the devotee never sees Krishna in the fire. He sees the Paramatma. Why? Because the devotee will think Krishna will burn. Right? When you have a deity, if it's cold in the room and you don't put on a blanket, you don't think, oh, he's the Supreme Lord. You have a Krishna. He's the Supreme Lord. He doesn't need a blanket. No, you think he's freezing. And the devotee's actually in that mood. And Krishna reciprocates in that mood. So he says, so similarly, Krishna's desire for enjoyment increases on Ekadasi, which means there's greater opportunity for the devotee to do service. So really what happens is the devotee is so much absorbed because Krishna can enjoy more on Ekadasi that he doesn't really have time to eat. It's not that she just does it to burn up the thing, but actually it's the day of Lord Hari. The devotee becomes happy because this is a day where Krishna can enjoy more. So the devotee increases his service on that day. And because it's a day where Krishna can enjoy more and the devotee increases his service. This is a lecture in 1937 in Kurukshetra by Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. When Krishna increases then because there's greater remuneration, because Krishna is in greater need for service. And therefore, if we follow Ekadasi, the remuneration is he gives us an increased desire to serve and a better devotional attitude. Therefore, Bhaktivedanta Thakur says, Madhavatiti Bhakati Janani. The days of Lord Hari, Madhavatiti Bhakati Janani. Now, the days of Lord Hari give birth to devotion. But then there's another thing, that because the real thing is service, that service is the thing, not that you just fast and then you sleep, but it's all service. He even gave an example, Prabhupada's godbrother Sridhar Maharaj, he gave an example, because he was explaining this. He gave the example that one time they wanted, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati was going to Vrindavan for Purushottama Mas, and he had to travel ahead to give, he had to travel ahead to make the arrangements. And Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, Hayagriva Brahmachari said, cook him rice. Even though they would not eat grain, he said, because you need energy. And then he said that this devotee, Hayagriva Brahmachari, who later became Bhakti Dayata Madhava Maharaj, he said, I'll just take some sabu, some tapioca, some banana, and some yogurt. But then another thing, very interesting, when Sridhar Maharaj said, it's in a book that he wrote, he said, the Professor Sanyal, he would have ate, he was so submissive to Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he would have eaten the rice. And it's not that the other one was wrong, but then I remember what Pradyumna told me about Professor Sanyal. They said he was the editor of the books. So one time there was a word that they brought it to some publisher, and a word was defined wrong. And the publisher said, if you use it in this way, that's the wrong word that's used. And he had so much faith in Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati that he looked at the publisher, he said, then change the dictionary. He said, then change the dictionary. And then Pradyumna told me something very interesting. Pradyumna told me something. He said that in sometimes in the Bhagavatam even, because there's sometimes a mistake in grammar. And he said when the commentators go over that, there's so much regard for the words of the Acharya that they say this word actually means this, but Rishi Uchu, but the Rishi said this. They'll never say it's wrong. Just to keep the faculty of faith, which is the precursor of knowledge. So you can just see the culture of the culture there. Now, I have to go now on parikram, but I'm going to walk down, and I may keep on talking as we go. But for those of you that just got on, I just gave a quick class because of so many things, so we'll be down in a minute there. Actually, if you just hold on a minute, I'll be right back with you for those of you that want to stay on. It'll take me a minute. I just have to organize one thing. Hi, Krishna. I'm back with all of you. I'll say one more thing, and we'll see how the flow goes. But I'm going to have to walk down, actually right now, because the Prikram is leaving from the MBT gate. I'm actually in the MBT. One other point that was, you may hear other people, but one other point that was, one other point that was interesting, and then I'll finish. I can see that quite a few devotees are waiting for the Prikram. Very interesting point also about Jagannath, how Jagannath is the conflict between Dwarka Leela and Vrindavan Leela. And the point that was actually given was very interesting. And I'm not sure I'll be able to complete this. I'll probably have to do it next time. So let me try. If the people are... I'm going to have to start walking downstairs. I hope you could all hear me. Okay. Excuse me, I have to say hello to someone. Hi, Krishna. Okay. What? Okay. Well, it's hard. Let me see if I can explain on the run, but I also feel strange because I'm walking through the NVT with a cell phone. Let me just get out to the front there. Anyway, next class, I can see this is not going to work. I have to organize the Prikram and the devotees on the thing.